quick, skilled hands. I asked, "Will we come back here once we leave?" She returned to the book. "Not for a while." Something in my chest started sinking. To an immortal, a while must be a long, long time. I took that as an invitation to leave and headed for the door in the back of the loft. But Amryn said, "When Rhys came back after Amarantha, he was a ghost. He pretended he wasn't, but he was. You made him come alive again." Words stalled, and I didn't want to think about it. Not when whatever good I'd done, whatever good we'd done for each other, might have been wiped away by what I'd said to him. So I said, "He is lucky to have all of you." "No," she said softly, more gently than I'd ever heard. "We are lucky to have him, Feyre." I turned from the door. "I have known many High Lords," Amryn continued, studying her paper. "Cruel ones, cunning ones, weak ones, powerful ones. But never one that dreamed. Not as he does."
"Dreams of what?" I breathed.
"Of peace, of freedom, of a world united, a world thriving, of something better for all of us."
"He thinks he'll be remembered as the villain in the story," she snorted. "But I forgot to tell him," I said quietly, opening the door, "that the villain is usually the person who locks up the maiden and throws away the key."
"Oh?"
I shrugged. "He was the one who let me out."
"If you've moved elsewhere," I wrote after getting home from Amryn's apartment, "you could have at least given me the keys to this house. I keep leaving the door unlocked when I go out. It's getting to be too tempting for the neighborhood burglars."
No response. The letter didn't even vanish. I tried after breakfast the next day, the morning of Starfall.
"Cassian says you're sulking in the House of Wind. What unhigh lord-like behavior? What of my training?"
Again, no reply. My guilt and whatever else it was started to shift. I could barely keep from shredding the paper as I wrote my third one after lunch. "Is this punishment? Or do people in your inner circle not get second chances if they piss you off? You're a hateful coward." I was climbing out of the bath, the city abuzz with preparations for the festivities at sundown, when I looked at the desk where I'd left the letter and watched it vanish. Nuala and Caradwyn arrived to help me dress, and I tried not to stare at the desk as I waited. Waited and waited for the response. It didn't come. Chapter 44. But despite the letter, despite the mess between us, as I gaped at the mirror an hour later, I couldn't quite believe what stared back. I had been so relieved these past few weeks to be sleeping at all that I'd forgotten to be grateful that I was keeping down my food. The fullness had come back to my face, my body. What should have taken weeks longer as a human had been hurried along by the miracle of my immortal blood. And the dress. I'd never worn anything like it, and doubted I'd ever wear anything like it again. Crafted of tiny blue gems so pale they were almost white, it clung to every curve and hollow before draping to the floor and pooling like liquid starlight. The long sleeves were tight, capped at the wrists with cuffs of pure diamond. The neckline grazed my collarbones, the modesty of it undone by how the gown hugged areas I supposed a female might enjoy showing off. My hair had been swept off my face with two combs of silver and diamond, then left to drape down my back. And I thought, as I stood alone in my bedroom, that I might have looked like a fallen star. Rhysand was nowhere to be found when I worked up the courage to go to the rooftop garden. The beading on the dress clinked and hissed against the floors as I walked through the nearly dark house, all the lights softened or extinguished. In fact, the whole city had blown out its lights. A winged, muscled figure stood atop the roof, and my heart stumbled. But then he turned, just as the scent hit me, and something in my chest sank a bit as Cassian let out a low whistle.
"I should have let Nuala and Caradwyn dress me."
I didn't know whether to smile or wince. "You look rather good despite it." He did. He was out of his fighting clothes and armor, sporting a black tunic cut to show off that warrior's body. His black hair had been brushed and smoothed, and even his wings looked cleaner. Cassian held his arms out. His siphons remained, a metal fingerless gauntlet that stretched between the tailored sleeves of his jacket.
Ready?
He kept me company the past 2 days, training me each morning. While he'd shown me more particulars on how to use an Illyrian blade, mostly how to disembowel someone with it, we'd chatted about everything. Our equally miserable lives as children, hunting, food, everything, that is, except for the subject of Rhysand. Cassian had mentioned only once that Rhys was up at the house, and I supposed my expression had told him enough about not wanting to hear anything else. He grinned at me now.
With all those gems and beads, you might be too heavy to carry. I hope you've been practicing your winnowing in case I drop you.
Funny. I allowed him to scoop me into his arms before we shot into the sky. Winnowing might still evade me, but I wished I had wings, I realized. Great, powerful wings so I might fly as they did, so I might see the world and all it had to offer. Below us, every lingering light winked out. There was no moon, no music flitted through the streets. Silence, as if waiting for something. Cassian soared through the quiet dark to where the House of Wind loomed. I could make out crowds gathered on the many balconies and patios, only from the faint gleam of starlight on their hair, then the clink of their glasses and low chatter as we neared. Cassian set me down on the crowded patio off the dining room, only a few revelers bothering to look at us. Dim bowls of phaylite inside the house illuminated spreads of food and endless rows of green bottles of sparkling wine atop the tables. Cassian was gone and returned before I missed him, pressing a glass of the latter into my hand. No sign of Rhysand. Maybe he'd avoid me the entire party. Someone called Cassian's name from down the patio, and he clapped me on the shoulder before striding off. A tall male, his face in shadow, clasped forearms with Cassian, his white teeth gleaming in the darkness. Azriel stood with the stranger already, his wings tucked in tight to keep revelers from knocking into them. He, Cassian, and Moore had all been quiet today, understandably so. I scanned for signs of my other friends. The word sounded in my head. Was that what they were? Amryn was nowhere in sight, but I spotted a golden head at the same moment she spied me, and Moore breezed to my side. She wore a gown of pure white, little more than a slip of silk that showed off her generous curves. Indeed, a glance over her shoulder revealed Azriel staring blatantly at the back view of it, Cassian and the stranger already too deep in conversation to notice what had drawn the spymaster's attention. For a moment, the ravenous hunger on Azriel's face made my stomach tighten. I'd remembered feeling like that, remembered how it felt to yield to it, how I'd come close to doing that the other night. Moore said, "It won't be long now." Until what? No one had told me what to expect, as they hadn't wanted to ruin the surprise of Starfall. Until the fun. I surveyed the party around us. This isn't the fun? Moore lifted an eyebrow. None of us really care about this part. Once it starts, you'll see. She took a sip of her sparkling wine. That's some dress. You're lucky Amryn is hiding in her little attic, or she'd probably steal it right off you. The vain Drake. She won't take time off from decoding? Yes, and no. Something about Starfall disturbs her, she claims. Who knows, she probably does it to be contrary. Even as she spoke, her words were distant, her face a bit tight. I said quietly, "Are you ready for tomorrow?" Tomorrow, when we'd leave Valaris to keep anyone from noticing our movements in this area. Moore, Azriel had told me tightly over breakfast that morning, would return to the Court of Nightmares to check in on her father's recovery. Probably not the best place to discuss our plans, but Moore shrugged. I don't have any choice but to be ready. I'll come with you to the camp, then go my way afterward. Cassian will be happy about that, I said, even if Asriel was the one trying his best not to stare at her. Moore snorted. Maybe. I lifted a brow.
So, you two...
Another shrug. Once? Well, not even. I was 17. He wasn't even a year older. When everything had happened. But there was no darkness on her face as she sighed.
Cauldron, that was a long time ago.
I visited Rhys for 2 weeks when he was training in the war camp, and Cassian, Asriel, and I became friends. One night, Rhys and his mother had to go back to the Night Court, and Asriel went with them, so Cassian and I were left alone. And that night, one thing led to another, and I wanted Cassian to be the one who did it. I wanted to choose. A third shrug. I wondered if Asriel had wished to be the one she chose instead. If he'd ever admitted it to Moore, or Rhys. If he resented that he'd been away that night, that Moore hadn't considered him. Rhys came back the next morning, and when he learned what had happened, she laughed under her breath. We try not to talk about the incident. He and Cassian, I've never seen them fight like that. Hopefully I never will again. I know Rhys wasn't pissed about my virginity, but rather the danger that losing it had put me in. Asriel was even angrier about it, though he let Rhys do the walloping. They knew what my family would do for debasing myself with a bastard-born lesser fairy. She brushed a hand over her abdomen, as if she could feel that nail they'd spiked through it. They were right. So, you and Cassian, I said, wanting to move on from it, that darkness. You were never together again after that?
No. Moore said, laughing quietly.
I was desperate, reckless, that night. I picked him not just for his kindness, but also because I wanted my first time to be with one of the legendary Illyrian warriors. I wanted to lie with the greatest of Illyrian warriors, actually. And I'd taken one look at Cassian and known. After I got what I wanted, after everything, I didn't like that it caused a rift with him and Rhys, or even him and Az, so... Never again.
And you were never with anyone after it?
Not the cold, beautiful shadow singer who tried so hard not to watch her with longing on his face. I've had lovers, Moore clarified, but I get bored. And Cassian has had them too, so don't get that unrequited love, moony woo-woo look. He just wants what he can't have, and it's irritated him for centuries that I walked away and never looked back.
Oh, it drives him insane.
Rhys said from behind me, and I jumped, but the High Lord was circling me. I crossed my arms as he paused and smirked.
You look like a woman again.
You really know how to compliment females, cousin, Moore said, and patted him on the shoulder as she spotted an acquaintance and went to say hello. I tried not to look at Rhys, who was in a black jacket, casually unbuttoned at the top so that the white shirt beneath, also unbuttoned at the neck, showed the tattoos on his chest peeking through. Tried not to look, and failed. Do you plan to ignore me some more? I said coolly.
I'm here now, aren't I? I wouldn't want you to call me a hateful coward again.
I opened my mouth, but felt all the wrong words start to come out. So I shut it, and looked for Asriel or Cassian or anyone who might talk to me. Going up to a stranger was starting to sound appealing when Rhys said, a bit hoarsely,
I wasn't punishing you. I needed time.
I didn't want to have this conversation here, with so many people listening, so I gestured to the party and said, Will you please tell me what this gathering is about? Rhysand stepped up behind me, snorting as he said into my ear,
Look up.
Indeed, as I did so, the crowd hushed. No speech for your guests, I murmured. Easy. I just wanted it to be easy between us again.
Tonight's not about me, though my presence is appreciated and noted, he said. Tonight's about that.
As he pointed, a star vaulted across the sky, brighter and closer than any I'd seen before. The crowd and city below cheered, raising their glasses as it passed right overhead, and only when it had disappeared over the curve of the horizon did they drink deeply. I leaned back a step into Rhys, and quickly stepped away, out of his heat and power and scent. We'd done enough damage in a similar position at the Court of Nightmares. Another star crossed the sky, twirling and twisting over itself, as if it were reveling in its own sparkling beauty. It was chased by another, and another, until a brigade of them were unleashed from the edge of the horizon, like 1,000 archers had loosed them from mighty bows. The stars cascaded over us, filling the world with white and blue light. They were like living fireworks, and my breath lodged in my throat as the stars kept on falling and falling. I'd never seen anything so beautiful. And when the sky was full with them, when the stars raced and danced and flowed across the world, the music began. Wherever they were, people began dancing, swaying and twirling, some grabbing hands and spinning, spinning, spinning to the drums, the strings, the glittering harps. Not like the grinding and thrusting of the Court of Nightmares, but joyous, peaceful dancing, for the love of sound and movement and life. I lingered with Rhysand at the edge of it, caught between watching the people dancing on the patio, hands upraised, and the stars streaming past, closer and closer until I swore I could have touched them if I'd leaned out. And there were Mor and Asriel and Cassian, the three of them dancing together, Mor's head tipped back to the sky, arms up, the starlight gleaming on the pure white of her gown, dancing as if it might be her last time, flowing between Asriel and Cassian like the three of them were one unit, one being. I looked behind me to find Rhys watching them, his face soft, sad. Separated for 50 years and reunited, only to be cleaved apart so soon to fight again for their freedom. Rhys caught my gaze and said, "Come, there's a better view, quieter." He held a hand out to me. That sorrow, that weight lingered in his eyes, and I couldn't bear to see it, just as I couldn't bear to see my three friends dancing together, as if it was the last time they'd ever do it. Rhys led me to a small private balcony jutting from the upper level of the House of Wind. On the patios below, the music still played, the people still danced, the stars wheeling by, close and swift. He let go as I took a seat on the balcony rail. I immediately decided against it as I beheld the drop and backed away a healthy step. Rhys chuckled. "If you fell, you know I'd bother to save you before you hit the ground."
"But not until I was close to death."
"Maybe." I leaned a hand against the rail, peering at the stars whizzing past. "As punishment for what I said to you?"
"I said some horrible things, too," he murmured.
"I didn't mean it," I blurted. "I meant it more about myself than you. And I'm sorry."
He watched the stars for a moment before he replied.
"You were right, though. I stayed away because you were right. Though I'm glad to hear my absence felt like a punishment."
I snorted, but was grateful for the humor, for the way he'd always been able to amuse me. "Any news with the orb or the queens?"
"Nothing yet. We're waiting for them to deign to reply."
We were silent again, and I studied the stars.
They're not stars at all."
"No."
Rhys came up beside me at the rail.
"Our ancestors thought they were, but they're just spirits on a yearly migration to somewhere. Why they pick this day to appear here, no one knows."
I felt his eyes upon me and tore my gaze from the shooting stars. Light and shadow passed over his face. The cheers and music of the city far, far below were barely audible over the crowd gathered at the house.
"There must be hundreds of them," I managed to say, dragging my stare back to the stars whizzing past.
"Thousands," he said. "They'll keep coming until dawn. Or I hope they will. There were less and less of them the last time I witnessed starfall."
Before Amarantha had locked him away.
"What's happening to them?"
I looked in time to see him shrug. Something twanged in my chest.
"I wish I knew. But they keep coming back, despite it."
"Why?"
"Why does anything cling to something? Maybe they love where they're going so much that it's worth it. Maybe they'll keep coming back until there's only one star left. Maybe that one star will make the trip forever, out of the hope that someday, if it keeps coming back often enough,
Another star will find it again. I frowned at the wine in my hand. That's a very sad thought.
Indeed.
Rhys rested his forearms on the balcony edge, close enough for my fingers to touch, if I dared. A calm, full silence enveloped us. Too many words. I still had too many words in me. I don't know how much time passed, but it must have been a while, because when he spoke again, I jolted.
Every year that I was under the mountain and Starfall came around, Amarantha made sure that I serviced her the entire night. Starfall is no secret, even to outsiders. Even the Court of Nightmares crawls out of the hewn city to look up at the sky. So she knew. She knew what it meant to me.
I stopped hearing the celebrations around us. I'm sorry. It was all I could offer.
I got through it by reminding myself that my friends were safe, that Velaris was safe. Nothing else mattered, so long as I had that. She could use my body however she wanted. I didn't care.
So why aren't you down there with them? I asked, even as I tucked the horror of what had been done to him into my heart.
They don't know what she did to me on Starfall. I don't want it to ruin their night.
I don't think it would. They'd be happy if you let them shoulder the burden.
The same way you rely on others to help with your own troubles.
We stared at each other, close enough to share breath. And maybe all those words bottled up in me. Maybe I didn't need them right now. My fingers grazed his, warm and sturdy, patient, as if waiting to see what else I might do. Maybe it was the wine, but I stroked a finger down his. And as I turned to him more fully, something blinding and tinkling slammed into my face. I reeled back, crying out as I bent over, shielding my face against the light that I could still see against my shut eyes. Rhys let out a startled laugh. A laugh. And when I realized that my eyes hadn't been singed out of their sockets, I whirled on him. I could have been blinded, I hissed, shoving him. He took a look at my face and burst out laughing again. Real laughter, open and delighted and lovely. I wiped at my face, and when I pulled my hands down, I gaped. Pale green light, like drops of paint, glowed in flecks on my hand. Splattered star spirit. I didn't know if I should be horrified or amused, or disgusted. When I went to rub it off, Rhys caught my hands.
Don't, he said, still laughing. It looks like your freckles are glowing.
My nostrils flared, and I went to shove him again, not caring if my new strength knocked him off the balcony. He could summon wings. He could deal with it. He sidestepped me, veering toward the balcony rail, but not fast enough to avoid the careening star that collided with the side of his face. He leaped back with a curse. I laughed, the sound rasping out of me, not a chuckle or snort, but a cackling laugh. And I laughed again and again as he lowered his hands from his eyes. The entire left side of his face had been hit. Like heavenly war paint, that's what it looked like. I could see why he didn't want me to wipe mine away. Rhys was examining his hands, covered in the dust, and I stepped toward him, peering at the way it glowed and glittered. He went still as death as I took one of his hands in my own and traced a star shape on the top of his palm, playing with the glimmer and shadows until it looked like one of the stars that had hit us. His fingers tightened on mine, and I looked up. He was smiling at me, and looked so un-High Lord-like with the glowing dust on the side of his face that I grinned back. I hadn't even realized what I'd done until his own smile faded and his mouth parted slightly.
Smile again,
he whispered. I hadn't smiled for him, ever, or laughed. Under the mountain, I had never grinned, never chuckled, and afterward. And this male before me, my friend. For all that he had done, I had never given him either, even when I had just painted something on him, for him. I'd painted again. So I smiled at him, broad and without restraint.
You're exquisite,
he breathed. The air was too tight, too close between our bodies, between our joined hands,
but I said, "You owe me two thoughts back from when I first came here. Tell me what you're thinking."
Rhys rubbed his neck. "You want to know why I didn't speak or see you? Because I was so convinced you'd throw me out on my ass. I just..."
He dragged a hand through his hair and huffed a laugh.
"I figured hiding was a better alternative."
"Who would have thought the High Lord of the Night Court could be afraid of an illiterate human?" I purred. He grinned, nudging me with an elbow. "That's one," I pushed. "Tell me another thought." His eyes fell on my mouth.
"I'm wishing I could take back that kiss under the mountain."
I sometimes forgot that kiss, when he'd done it to keep Amarantha from knowing that Tamlin and I had been in the Forgotten Hall, tangled up together. Rhysand's kiss had been brutal, demanding, and yet... why? His gaze settled on the hand I'd painted instead, as if it were easier to face.
"Because I didn't make it pleasant for you, and I was jealous and pissed off, and... I knew you hated me."
Dangerous territory, I warned myself. No, honesty, that's what it was. Honesty and trust. I'd never had that with anyone. Rhys looked up, meeting my gaze, and whatever was on my face, I think it might have been mirrored on his, the hunger and longing and surprise. I swallowed hard, traced another line of stardust along the inside of his powerful wrist. I didn't think he was breathing. Do you want to dance with me? I whispered. He was silent for long enough that I lifted my head to scan his face, but his eyes were bright, silver-lined.
"You want to dance?"
he rasped, his fingers curling around mine. I pointed with my chin toward the celebration below. Down there, with them. Where the music beckoned, where life beckoned, where he should spend the night with his friends, and where I wanted to spend it with them too, even with the strangers in attendance. I did not mind stepping out of the shadows, did not mind even being in the shadows to begin with, so long as he was with me. My friend through so many dangers, who had fought for me when no one else would, even myself.
"Of course I'll dance with you," Rhys said, his voice still raw. "All night, if you wish."
"Even if I step on your toes?"
"Even then."
He leaned in, brushing his mouth against my heated cheek. I closed my eyes at the whisper of a kiss, at the hunger that ravaged me in its wake, that might ravage Prithian, and all around us, as if the world itself were indeed falling apart, stars rained down. Bits of stardust glowed on his lips as he pulled away. As I stared up at him, breathless, while he smiled.
The smile the world would likely never see. The smile he'd given up for the sake of his people, his lands.
He said softly,
"I am very glad I met you, Feyre."
I blinked away the burning in my eyes. "Come on," I said, tugging on his hand. "Let's go join the dance." Chapter 45. The Illyrian war camp deep in the northern mountains was freezing. Apparently, spring was still little more than a whisper in the region. Moore winnowed us all in, Rhysand and Cassian flanking us. We had danced, all of us together, and I had never seen Rhys so happy, laughing with Asriel, drinking with Moore, bickering with Cassian. I danced with each of them, and when the night had shifted toward dawn and the music became soft and honeyed, I had let Rhys take me in his arms and dance with me, slowly, until the other guests had left, until Moore was asleep on a settee in the dining room, until the gold disc of the sun gilded Valaris. He'd flown me back to the townhouse through the pink and purple and gray of the dawn, both of us silent, and had kissed my brow once before walking down the hall to his own room. I didn't lie to myself about why I waited for 30 minutes to see if my door would open, or to at least hear a knock, but nothing. We were bleary-eyed but polite at the lunch table hours later, Moore and Cassian unusually quiet, talking mostly to Amryn and Asriel, who had come to bid us farewell. Amryn would continue working on the book until we received the second half, if we received it.
The Shadow Singer was heading out to gather information and manage his spies stationed at the other courts and attempting to break into the human one. I managed to speak to them, but most of my energy went into not looking at Rhysand, or thinking about the feeling of his body pressed to mine as we'd danced for hours, that brush of his mouth on my skin. I'd barely been able to fall asleep because of it. Traitor. Even if I'd left Tamlin, I was a traitor. I'd been gone for 2 months, just two. In fairy terms, it was probably considered less than a day. Tamlin had given me so much, done so many kind things for me and my family. And here I was, wanting another male, even as I hated Tamlin for what he'd done, how he'd failed me. Traitor. The word continued echoing in my head as I stood at Moore's side, Rhys and Cassian a few steps ahead, and peered out at the windblown camp. Moore had barely given Asriel more than a brief embrace before bidding him goodbye. And for all the world, the spymaster looked like he didn't care, until he gave me a swift warning look. I was still torn between amusement and outrage at the assumption I'd stick my nose into his business. Indeed. Built near the top of a forested mountain, the Illyrian camp was all bare rock and mud, interrupted only by crude, easy-to-pack tents centered around large fire pits. Near the tree line, a dozen permanent buildings had been erected of the gray mountain stone. Smoke puffed from their chimneys against the brisk, cloudy morning, occasionally swirled by the passing wings overhead. So many winged males soaring past on their way to other camps or in training. Indeed, on the opposite end of the camp, in a rocky area that ended in a sheer plunge off the mountain, were the sparring and training rings. Racks of weapons were left out to the elements. In the chalk-painted rings, males of all ages now trained with sticks and swords and shields and spears. Fast, lethal, brutal. No complaints, no shouts of pain. There was no warmth here, no joy. Even the houses at the other end of the camp had no personal touches, as if they were used only for shelter or storage. And this was where Rhys Asriel and Cassian had grown up, where Cassian had been cast out to survive on his own. It was so cold that even bundled in my fur-lined leather I was shivering. I couldn't imagine a child going without adequate clothing or shelter for a night, much less 8 years. Moore's face was pale, tight. I hate this place, she said under her breath, the heat of it clouding the air in front of us. It should be burned to the ground. Cassian and Rhys were silent as a tall, broad-shouldered older male approached, flanked by five other Illyrian warriors, wings all tucked in, hands within casual reach of their weapons. No matter that Rhys could rip their minds apart without lifting a finger. They each wore siphons of varying colors on the backs of their hands, the stones smaller than Asriel and Cassian's, and only one, not like the seven apiece that my two friends wore to manage their tremendous power. The male in front said, "Another camp inspection? Your dog," he jerked his chin at Cassian, "was here just the other week. The girls are training." Cassian crossed his arms. "I don't see them in the ring." "They do chores first," the male said, shoulders pushing back and wings flaring slightly. "Then when they've finished, they get to train." A low snarl slipped past Moore's mouth, and the male turned our way. He stiffened. Moore flashed him a wicked smile. "Hello, Lord Devlin," the leader of the camp then. He gave her a dismissive once-over and looked back to Rhys. Cassian's warning growl rumbled in my stomach. Rhys said at last, "Pleasant as it always is to see you, Devlin, there are two matters at hand. First, the girls, as you were clearly told by Cassian, are to train before chores, not after. Get them out on the pitch, now." I shuddered at the pure command in that tone. He continued, "Second, we'll be staying here for the time being. Clear out my mother's old house. No need for a housekeeper. We'll look after ourselves." "The house is occupied by my top warriors." "Then unoccupy it," Rhysand said simply, "and have them clean it before they do." The voice of the High Lord of the Night Court, who delighted in pain and made his enemies tremble. Devlin sniffed at me.
I poured every bit of cranky exhaustion into holding his narrowed gaze.
Another like that creature you bring here? I thought she was the only one of her ilk.
Amryn, Rhys drawled, sends her regards. And as for this one, I tried not to flinch away from meeting his stare.
She's mine,
he said quietly, but viciously enough that Devlin and his warriors nearby heard.
And if any of you lay a hand on her, you lose that hand, and then you lose your head.
I tried not to shiver, as Cassian and Moore showed no reaction at all.
And once Feyre is done killing you, Rhys smirked, then I'll grind your bones to dust.
I almost laughed, but the warriors were now assessing the threat Rhys had established me as, and coming up short with answers. I gave them all a small smile anyway, one I'd seen Amryn make 100 times, let them wonder what I could do if provoked.
We're heading out,
Rhys said to Cassian and Moore, not even bothering to dismiss Devlin before walking toward the tree line.
We'll be back at nightfall.
He gave his cousin a look.
Try to stay out of trouble, please. Devlin hates us the least of the warlords, and I don't feel like finding another camp.
Mother above, the others must be unpleasant if Devlin was the mildest of them. Moore winked at us both.
I'll try.
Rhys just shook his head and said to Cassian,
check on the forces, then make sure those girls are practicing like they should be. If Devlin or the others object, do what you have to.
Cassian grinned in a way that showed he'd be more than happy to do exactly that. He was the High Lord's general, and yet Devlin called him a dog. I didn't want to imagine what it had been like for Cassian without that title growing up. Then finally, Rhys looked at me again, his eyes shuttered.
Let's go.
You heard from my sisters? A shake of the head.
No. Azriel is checking today if they received a response. You and I...
The wind rustled his hair as he smirked.
We're going to train.
Where? He gestured to the sweeping land beyond, to the forested steppes he'd once mentioned.
Away from any potential casualties.
He offered his hand as his wings flared, his body preparing for flight. But all I heard were those two words he'd said, echoing against the steady beat of traitor, traitor.
She's mine.
Being in Rhys's arms again, against his body, was a test of stubbornness, for both of us, to see who'd speak about it first. We'd been flying over the most beautiful mountains I'd ever seen, snowy and flecked with pines, heading toward rolling steppes beyond them, when I said, you're training female Illyrian warriors?
Trying to.
Rhys gazed across the brutal landscape.
I banned wing clipping a long, long time ago, but at the more zealous camps, deep within the mountains, they do it. And when Amarantha took over, even the milder camps started doing it again. To keep their women safe, they claimed. For the past 100 years, Cassian has been trying to build an aerial fighting unit amongst the females, trying to prove that they have a place on the battlefield. So far, he's managed to train a few dedicated warriors, but the males make life so miserable that many of them left. And for the girls in training, a hiss of breath, it's a long road. But Devlin is one of the few who even lets the girls train without a tantrum.
I'd hardly call disobeying orders without a tantrum.
Some camps issue decrees that if a female was caught training, she was to be deemed unmarriageable. I can't fight against things like that, not without slaughtering the leaders of each camp and personally raising each and every one of their offspring.
And yet your mother loved them, and you three wear their tattoos.
I got the tattoos in part for my mother, in part to honor my brothers, who fought every day of their lives for the right to wear them.
Why do you let Devlin speak to Cassian like that?
Because I know when to pick my fights with Devlin, and I know Cassian would be pissed if I stepped in to crush Devlin's mind like a grape when he could handle it himself.
A whisper of cold went through me. Have you thought about doing it?
I did just now. But most camp lords never would have given the three of us a shot at the blood rite. Devlin let a half-breed and 2 bastards take it, and did not deny us our victory.
Pines dusted with fresh snow blurred beneath us. What's the blood rite?
So many questions today. I squeezed his shoulder hard enough to hurt, and he chuckled. You go unarmed into the mountains, magic band, no siphons, wings bound, with no supplies or clothes beyond what you have on you. You and every other Illyrian male who wants to move from novice to true warrior. A few hundred head into the mountains at the start of the week. Not all come out at the end. The frost-kissed landscape rolled on forever, unyielding as the warriors who ruled over it. Do you kill each other? Most try to. For food and clothes, for vengeance, for glory between feuding clans. Devlin allowed us to take the right, but also made sure Cassian, Azrael, and I were dumped in different locations.
What happened?
We found each other. Killed our way across the mountains to get to each other. Turns out, a good number of Illyrian males wanted to prove they were stronger, smarter than us. Turns out they were wrong.
I dared to look at his face. For a heartbeat, I could see it. Blood splattered, savage, fighting and slaughtering to get to his friends, to protect and save them. Rhys set us down in a clearing, the pine trees towering so high they seemed to caress the underside of the heavy gray clouds passing on the swift wind. So, you're not using magic. But I am, I said, taking a few steps from him.
Our enemy is keyed in on my powers. You, however, remain invisible.
He waved his hand.
Let's see what all your practicing has amounted to.
I didn't feel like it. I just said, When did you meet Tamlin?
I knew what Rhysand's father had done. I hadn't let myself think too much about it. About how he'd killed Tamlin's father and brothers, and mother. But now, after last night, after the Court of Nightmares, I had to know. Rhys's face was a mask of patience. Show me something impressive, and I'll tell you. Magic for answers.
I know what sort of game you're playing.
I cut myself off at the hint of a smirk.
Very well.
I held out my hand before me, palm cupped, and willed silence into my veins, my mind. Silence and calm and weight, like being underwater. In my hand, a butterfly of water flapped and danced. Rhys smiled a bit, but the amusement died as he said, Tamlin was younger than me, born when the war started. But after the war, when he'd matured, we got to know each other at various court functions. Rhys clenched his jaw. He seemed decent for a High Lord's son, better than Baron's brood at the Autumn Court. Tamlin's brothers were equally as bad, though. Worse. And they knew Tamlin would take the title one day. And to a half-breed Illyrian who'd had to prove himself, defend his power, I saw what Tamlin went through. I befriended him, sought him out whenever I was able to get away from the war camps or court. Maybe it was pity, but I taught him some Illyrian techniques.
Did anyone know?
He raised his brows, giving a pointed look to my hand. I scowled at him and summoned songbirds of water, letting them flap around the clearing as they'd flown around my bathing room at the summer court. Cassian and Azrael knew, Rhys went on. My family knew, and disapproved. His eyes were chips of ice. But Tamlin's father was threatened by it, by me. And because he was weaker than both me and Tamlin, he wanted to prove to the world that he wasn't. My mother and sister were to travel to the Illyrian war camp to see me. I was supposed to meet them halfway, but I was busy training a new unit and decided to stay. My stomach turned over and over and over, and I wished I had something to lean against, as Rhys said. Tamlin's father, brothers, and Tamlin himself set out into the Illyrian wilderness, having heard from Tamlin, from me, where my mother and sister would be, that I had plans to see them. I was supposed to be there. I wasn't. And they slaughtered my mother and sister anyway.
I began shaking my head, eyes burning. I didn't know what I was trying to deny or erase or condemn.
It should have been me,
he said, and I understood. Understood what he'd said that day I'd wept before Cassian in the training pit.
They put their heads in boxes and sent them down the river, to the nearest camp. Tamlin's father kept their wings as trophies. I'm surprised you didn't see them pinned in the study. I was going to vomit. I was going to fall to my knees and weep. But Rhys looked at the menagerie of water animals I'd crafted and said, "What else?" Perhaps it was the cold, perhaps it was his story, but hoarfrost cracked in my veins, and the wild song of a winter wind howled in my heart. I felt it then, how easy it would be to jump between them, join them together, my powers. Each one of my animals halted midair and froze into perfectly carved bits of ice. One by one, they dropped to the earth and shattered. They were one. They had come from the same dark origin, the same eternal well of power. Once, long ago, before language was invented and the world was new. Rhys merely continued, "When I heard, when my father heard. I wasn't wholly truthful to you when I told you under the mountain that my father killed Tamlin's father and brothers. I went with him, helped him. We winnowed to the edge of the spring court that night, then went the rest of the way on foot. To the manor. I slew Tamlin's brothers on sight. I held their minds and rendered them helpless while I cut them into pieces, then melted their brains inside their skulls. And when I got to the High Lord's bedroom, he was dead. And my father had killed Tamlin's mother as well." I couldn't stop shaking my head. My father had promised not to touch her, that we weren't the kind of males who would do that. But he lied to me, and he did it anyway. And then he went for Tamlin's room. I couldn't breathe, as Rhys said. I tried to stop him. He didn't listen. He was going to kill him too. And I couldn't, after all the death, I was done. I didn't care that Tamlin had been there, had allowed them to kill my mother and sister, that he'd come to kill me because he didn't want to risk standing against them. I was done with death. So I stopped my father before the door. He tried to go through me. Tamlin opened the door, saw us, smelled the blood already leaking into the hallway, and I didn't even get to say a word before Tamlin killed my father in one blow. I felt the power shift to me, even as I saw it shift to him, and we just looked at each other, as we were both suddenly crowned High Lord. And then I ran. He'd murdered Rhysand's family. The High Lord I'd loved, he'd murdered his friend's family, and when I'd asked how his family died, he'd merely told me a rival court had done it. Rhysand had done it, and...
He didn't tell you any of that.
I'm sorry, I breathed, my voice hoarse.
What do you possibly have to be sorry for?
I didn't know. I didn't know that he'd done that. And Rhys thought I'd been comparing him against Tamlin, as if I held him to be some paragon.
Why did you stop?
He said, motioning to the ice shards on the pine needle carpet. The people he'd loved most, gone, slaughtered in cold blood, slaughtered by Tamlin. The clearing exploded in flame, the pine needles vanished, the trees groaned, and even Rhys swore as fire swept through the clearing, my heart, and devoured everything in its path. No wonder he'd made Tamlin beg that day I'd been formally introduced to him. No wonder he'd relished every chance to taunt Tamlin. Maybe my presence here was just to... No, I knew that wasn't true. I knew my being here had nothing to do with what was between him and Tamlin, though he no doubt enjoyed interrupting our wedding day. Saved me from that wedding day, actually.
Feyre,
Rhys said as the fire died. But there it was, crackling inside my veins, crackling beside veins of ice and water and darkness. Embers flared around us, floating in the air. And I sent out a breath of soothing dark, a breath of ice and water, as if it were a wind at dawn, sweeping clean the world. The power did not belong to the High Lords, not any longer. It belonged to me, as I belonged only to me, as my future was mine to decide, to forge. Once I discovered and mastered what the others had given me, I could weave them together into something new, something of every court and none of them. Flames hissed as it was extinguished so thoroughly that no smoke remained. But I met Rhys's stare, his eyes a bit wide as he watched me work. I rasped, "Why didn't you tell me sooner? The sight of him in his Illyrian fighting gear, wings spread across the entire width of the clearing, his blade peeking over his shoulder. There, in that hole in my chest, I saw the image there. At first interpretation, he'd look terrifying, vengeance and wrath incarnate. But if you came closer, the painting would show the beauty on his face, the wings flared not to hurt, but to carry me from danger, to shield me.
I didn't want you to think I was trying to turn you against him, he said.
The painting, I could see it, feel it. I wanted to paint it. I wanted to paint. I didn't wait for him to stretch out his hand before I went to him, and looking up into his face, I said, I want to paint you. He gently lifted me into his arms.
Nude would be best, he said in my ear.
Chapter 46.
I was so cold I might never be warm again. Even during winter in the mortal realm, I'd managed to find some kernel of heat. But after nearly emptying my cachet of magic that afternoon, even the roaring hearth fire couldn't thaw the chill around my bones. Did spring ever come to this blasted place?
They pick these locations, Cassian said across from me, as we dined on mutton stew around the table tucked into the corner of the front of the stone house, just to ensure the strongest among us survive.
Horrible people, Moore grumbled into her earthenware bowl. I don't blame Az for never wanting to come here.
I take it training the girls went well,
Rhys drawled from beside me, his thighs so close its warmth brushed my own. Cassian drained his mug of ale.
I got one of them to confess they hadn't received a lesson in 10 days. They'd all been too busy with chores, apparently.
No born fighters in this lot.
3, actually, Moore said. 3 out of 10 isn't bad at all. The others, I'd be happy if they just learned to defend themselves. But those 3, they've got the instinct, the claws. It's their stupid families that want them clipped and breeding. I rose from the table, taking my bowl to the sink tucked into the wall. The house was simple, but still bigger and in better condition than our old cottage. The front room served as kitchen, living area, and dining room, with 3 doors in the back. One for the cramped bathing room, one for the storage room, and one being a back door, because no true Illyrian, according to Rhys, ever made a home with only 1 exit.
When do you head for the Hewn City tomorrow?
Cassian said to her, quietly enough that I knew it was probably time to head upstairs. Moore scraped the bottom of her bowl. Apparently, Cassian had made the stew. It hadn't been half bad. After breakfast, before, I don't know. Maybe in the afternoon, when they're all just waking up. Rhys was a step behind me, bowl in hand, and motioned to leave my dirty dish in the sink. He inclined his head toward the steep, narrow stairs at the back of the house. They were wide enough to fit only 1 Illyrian warrior, another safety measure, and I glanced at the table 1 last time before disappearing upstairs. Moore and Cassian both stared at their empty bowls of food, softly talking for once. Every step upward, I could feel Rhys at my back, the heat of him, the ebb and flow of his power, and in this small space, the scent of him washed over me, beckoned to me. Upstairs was dark, illuminated by the small window at the end of the hall, and the moonlight streaming in through a thin gap in the pines around us. There were only 2 doors up here, and Rhys pointed to one of them.
You and Moore can share tonight. Just tell her to shut up if she babbles too much.
I wouldn't, though. If she needed to talk, to distract herself and be ready for what was to come tomorrow, I'd listen until dawn. He put a hand on his own doorknob, but I leaned against the wood of my door. It'd be so easy to take the 3 steps to cross the hall, to run my hands over that chest, trace those beautiful lips with my own. I swallowed as he turned to me. I didn't want to think what it meant, what I was doing, what this was, whatever it was, between us. Because things between us had never been normal, not from the very first moment we'd met on Callan May. I'd been unable to easily walk away from him then, when I'd thought he was deadly, dangerous. But now, traitor, traitor, traitor. He opened his mouth, but I had already slipped inside my room and shut the door. Freezing rain trickled through the pine boughs as I stalked through the mists in my Illyrian fighting leathers, armed with a bow, quiver, and knives, shivering like a wet dog. Rhys was 100 feet behind, carrying our packs. We'd flown deep into the forest steppes, far enough that we'd have to spend the night out here. Far enough that no one and nothing might see another glorious explosion of flame and temper, as Rhys had put it. Asriel hadn't brought word from my sisters of the Queen's status, so we had time to spare. Though Rhys certainly hadn't looked like it when he informed me that morning. But at least we wouldn't have to camp out here. Rhys had promised there was some sort of wayfarer's inn nearby. I turned toward where Rhys trailed behind me, spotting his massive wings first. More had set off before I'd even been awake, and Cassian had been pissy and on edge during breakfast. So much so that I'd been glad to leave as soon as I'd finished my porridge, and felt slightly bad for the Illyrians who had to deal with him that day. Rhys paused once he caught up, and even with the trees and rain between us, I could see his brows lift in silent question of why I'd paused. We hadn't spoken of Starfall or the Court of Nightmares, and last night, as I twisted and turned in the tiny bed, I'd decided, fun and distraction. It didn't need to be complicated. Keeping things purely physical, well, it didn't feel like as much of a betrayal. I lifted a hand, signaling Rhys to stay where he was. After yesterday, I didn't want him too close, lest I burn him, or worse. He sketched a dramatic bow, and I rolled my eyes as I stalked to the stream ahead, contemplating where I might indeed try to play with Baron's fire. My fire. Every step away, I could feel Rhys's stare devouring me. Or maybe that was through the bond, brushing against my mental shields, flashes of hunger so insatiable that it was an effort to focus on the task ahead, and not the feeling of what his hands had been like, stroking my thighs, pushing me against him. I could have sworn I felt a trickle of amusement on the other side of my mental shield, too. I hissed and made a vulgar gesture over my shoulder, even as I let my shield drop just a bit. That amusement turned into full delight, and then a lick of pleasure that went straight down my spine. Lower. My face heated, and a twig cracked under my boot, as loud as lightning. I gritted my teeth. The ground sloped toward a gray, gushing stream, fast enough that it had to be fed by the towering, snow-blasted mountains in the distance. Good. This spot was good. An extra supply of water to drown any flames that might escape. Plenty of open space. The wind blew away from me, tugging my scent southward, deeper into the forest as I opened my mouth to tell Rhys to stay back. With that wind and the roaring stream, it was no surprise that I didn't hear them until they had surrounded me.
Feyre.
I whirled, arrow knocked and aimed at the source of the voice. 4 Spring Court sentinels stalked from the trees behind me like wraiths, armed to the teeth and wide-eyed. 2 I knew, Braun and Hart. And between them stood Lucien. Chapter 47. If I wanted to escape, I could either face the stream or face them. But Lucien, his red hair was tied back, and there wasn't a hint of finery on him, just armored leather, swords, knives. His metal eye roamed over me, his golden skin pale.
"We've been hunting for you for over 2 months,"
he breathed, now scanning the woods, the stream, the sky. "Rhys, Cauldron save me, Rhys was too far back, and..."
"How did you find me?"
My steady, cold voice wasn't one I recognized, but hunting for me, as if I were indeed prey. If Tamlin was here, my blood went icier than the freezing rain now sluicing down my face into my clothes.
"Someone tipped us off you'd been out here, but it was luck that we caught your scent on the wind, and..."
Lucien took a step toward me. I stepped back, only 3 feet between me and the stream. Lucien's eye widened slightly.
"We need to get out of here. Tamlin's been..."
"He hasn't been himself. I'll take you right to..."
"No,"
I breathed. The word rasped through the rain, the stream, the pine forest. The 4 sentinels glanced between each other, then to the arrow I kept aimed. Lucien took me in again, and I could see what he was now gleaning, the Illyrian fighting leathers, the color and fullness that had returned to my face, my body, and the silent steel of my eyes.
Feyre, he said, holding out a hand. Let's go home.
I didn't move. That stopped being my home the day you let him lock me up inside of it. Lucien's mouth tightened.
It was a mistake. We all made mistakes. He's sorry, more sorry than you realize. So am I.
He stepped toward me, and I backed up another few inches. Not much space remained between me and the gushing waters below. Cassian's training crashed into me, as if all the lessons he'd been drilling into me each morning were a net that caught me as I free fell into my rising panic. Once Lucien touched me, he'd winnow us out. Not far, he wasn't that powerful, but he was fast. He'd jump miles away, then farther and farther, until Rhys couldn't reach me. He knew Rhys was here.
Feyre,
Lucien pleaded, and dared another step, his hand outraised. My arrow angled toward him, my bowstring groaning. I'd never realized that while Lucien had been trained as a warrior, Cassian, Asriel, Moore, and Rhys were warriors. Cassian could wipe Lucien off the face of the earth in a single blow.
Put the arrow down,
Lucien murmured, like he was soothing a wild animal. Behind him, the four sentinels closed in, herding me, the High Lord's pet and possession.
Don't, I breathed, touch me. You don't understand the mess we're in, Feyre. I need you home, now.
I didn't want to hear it. Peering at the stream below, I calculated my odds. The look cost me. Lucien lunged, hand out. One touch, that was all it'd take. I was not the High Lord's pet any longer. And maybe the world should learn that I did indeed have fangs. Lucian's finger grazed the sleeve of my leather jacket, and I became smoke and ash and night. The world stilled and bent, and there was Lucien, lunging so slowly for what was now blank space as I stepped around him, as I hurtled for the trees behind the sentinels. I stopped, and time resumed its natural flow. Lucien staggered, catching himself before he went over the cliff, and whirled, eye wide to discover me now standing behind his sentinels. Brawn and Hart flinched and backed away, from me, and from Rhysand at my side. Lucien froze. I made my face a mirror of ice, the unfeeling twin to the cruel amusement on Rhysand's features as he picked at a fleck of lint on his dark tunic. Dark, elegant clothes, no wings, no fighting leathers. The unruffled, fine clothes, another weapon, to hide just how skilled and powerful he was, to hide where he came from and what he loved. A weapon worth the cost of magic he'd used to hide it, even if it put us at risk of being tracked.
Little Lucien, Rhys purred. Didn't the Lady of the Autumn Court ever tell you that when a woman says no, she means it?
Prick, Lucien snarled, storming past his sentinels, but not daring to touch his weapons.
You filthy, whoring prick.
I loosed a growl. Lucien's eyes sliced to me, and he said with quiet horror,
What have you done, Feyre?
Don't come looking for me again, I said with equal softness. He'll never stop looking for you, never stop waiting for you to come home. The words hit me in the gut, like they were meant to. It must have shown in my face because Lucien pressed.
What did he do to you? Did he take your mind and...
Enough, Rhys said, angling his head with that casual grace.
Feyre and I are busy. Go back to your lands before I send your heads as a reminder to my old friend about what happens when Spring Court flunkies set foot in my territory.
The freezing rain slid down the neck of my clothes, down my back. Lucien's face was deathly pale.
You made your point, Feyre. Now, come home.
I'm not a child playing games, I said through my teeth. That's how they'd seen me, in need of coddling, explaining, defending.
Careful, Lucien, Rhysand drawled, or Feyre, darling, will send you back in pieces, too.
We are not your enemies, Feyre, Lucien pleaded. Things got bad. Ianthe got out of hand. But it doesn't mean you give up.
You gave up, I breathed. I felt even Rhys go still. You gave up on me, I said a bit more loudly. You were my friend, and you picked him, picked obeying him, even when you saw what his orders and his rules did to me, even when you saw me wasting away day by day. You have no idea how volatile those first few months were, Lucien snapped. We needed to present a unified, obedient front, and I was supposed to be the example to which all others in our court were held. You saw what was happening to me, but you were too afraid of him to truly do anything about it.
It was fear. Lucien had pushed Tamlin, but to a point. He'd always yielded at the end.
I begged you, I said, the words sharp and breathless. I begged you so many times to help me, to get me out of the house, even for an hour. And you left me alone, or shoved me into a room with Ianthe, or told me to stick it out.
Lucien said too quietly, and I suppose the night court is so much better. I remembered what I was supposed to know, to have experienced, what Lucien and the others could never know, not even if it meant forfeiting my own life. And I would, to keep Valaris safe, to keep Mor and Amryn and Cassian and Azriel and Rhys safe. I said to Lucien, low and quiet and as vicious as the talons that formed at the tips of my fingers, as vicious as the wondrous weight between my shoulder blades. When you spend so long trapped in darkness, Lucien, you find that the darkness begins to stare back. A pulse of surprise, of wicked delight against my mental shields, at the dark membranous wings I knew were now poking over my shoulders. Every icy kiss of rain sent jolts of cold through me. Sensitive, so sensitive, these Illyrian wings. Lucien backed up a step.
What did you do to yourself?
I gave him a little smile. The human girl you knew died under the mountain. I have no interest in spending immortality as a High Lord's pet. Lucien started shaking his head.
Feyre,
tell Tamlin, I said, choking on his name, on the thought of what he'd done to Rhys, to his family. If he sends anyone else into these lands, I will hunt each and every one of you down, and I will demonstrate exactly what the darkness taught me. There was something like genuine pain on his face. I didn't care. I just watched him, unyielding and cold and dark, the creature I might one day have become if I had stayed at the Spring Court, if I had remained broken for decades, centuries, until I learned to quietly direct those shards of pain outward, learned to savor the pain of others. Lucien nodded to his sentinels. Brawn and Hart, wide-eyed and shaking, vanished with the other two. Lucien lingered for a moment, nothing but air and rain between us. He said softly to Rhysand,
You're dead. You and your entire cursed court.
Then he was gone. I stared at the empty space where he'd been, waiting, not letting that expression off my face until a warm, strong finger traced a line down the edge of my right wing. It felt like having my ear breathed into. I shuddered, arching as a gasp came out of me. And then Rhys was in front of me, scanning my face, the wings behind me.
How?
Shape-shifting, I managed to say, watching the rain slide down his golden tan face. And it was distracting enough that the talons, the wings, the rippling darkness faded, and I was left light and cold in my own skin. Shape-shifting, at the sight of part of the history, the mail I had not really let myself remember. Shape-shifting, a gift from Tamlin that I had not wanted or needed until now. Rhys's eyes softened.
That was a very convincing performance.
I gave him what he wanted to see, I murmured. We should find another spot. He nodded, and his tunic and pants vanished, replaced by those familiar fighting leathers, the wings, the sword, my warrior, not my anything.
Are you all right?
He said, as he scooped me into his arms to fly us to another location. I nestled into his warmth, savoring it. The fact that it was so easy, that I felt so little, upsets me more than the encounter itself. Perhaps that had been my problem all along, why I hadn't dared to take that final step at Starfall,
I was guilty that I didn't feel awful, not truly, not for wanting him. A few mighty flaps had us soaring up through the trees and sailing low over the forest, rain slicing into my face.
I knew things were bad,
Rhysand said with quiet rage, barely audible over the freezing bite of the wind and rain.
But I thought Lucien, at least, would have stepped in.
I thought so too, I said, my voice smaller than I intended. He squeezed me gently, and I blinked at him through the rain. For once, his eyes were on me, not the landscape below.
You look good with wings,
he said, and kissed my brow. Even the rain stopped feeling so cold. Chapter 48. Apparently, the nearby inn was little more than a raucous tavern with a few rooms for rent, usually by the hour. And, as it was, there were no vacancies, save for a tiny, tiny room in what had once been part of the attic. Rhys didn't want anyone knowing who, exactly, was amongst the High Fae, fairies, Illyrians, and whoever else was packed in the inn below. Even I barely recognized him as he, without magic, without anything but adjusting his posture, muted that sense of otherworldly power until he was nothing but a common, very good-looking Illyrian warrior, pissy about having to take the last available room, so high up that there was only a narrow staircase leading to it. No hall, no other rooms. If I needed to use the bathing room, I'd have to venture to the level below, which, given the smells and sounds of the half-dozen rooms on that level, I made a point to use quickly on our way up, and then vow not to visit again until morning. A day of playing with water and fire and ice and darkness in the freezing rain had wrecked me so thoroughly that no one looked my way, not even the drunkest and loneliest of patrons in the town's tavern. The small town was barely that, a collection of an inn, an outfitter store, supply store, and a brothel, all geared toward the hunters, warriors, and travelers passing through this part of the forest, either on their way to the Illyrian lands or out of them, or just for the fairies who dwelled here, solitary and glad to be that way, too small and too remote for Amarantha or her cronies to have ever bothered with. Honestly, I didn't care where we were, so long as it was dry and warm. Rhys opened the door to our attic room and stood aside to let me pass. Well, at least it was one of those things. The ceiling was so slanted that to get to the other side of the bed, I'd have to crawl across the mattress. The room so cramped it was nearly impossible to walk around the bed to the tiny armoire shoved against the other wall. I could sit on the bed and open the armoire easily. The bed.
I asked for two,
Rhys said, hands already up. His breath clouded in front of him. Not even a fireplace, and not enough space to even demand he sleep on the floor. I didn't trust my mastery over flame to attempt warming the room. I'd likely burn this whole filthy place to the ground. If you can't risk using magic, then we'll have to warm each other, I said, and instantly regretted it. Body heat, I clarified. And just to wipe that look off his face, I added, my sisters and I had to share a bed. I'm used to it.
I'll try to keep my hands to myself.
My mouth went a bit dry.